You're listening to Bit by Bit, June 29th, 2007. Hello and welcome. This is Bob Sprankle with Bit by Bit, podcast for teachers by teachers about integrating technology into the classroom and the changing environment in the classroom in the 21st century. Hello and welcome. I'm going through a car wash right now. That's the great thing about the Nano iPod. It's small enough to carry around with you, and you can just pull it out at any time and get your intro done. Hey, today we're going back to yesterday. I did a closing keynote at the York Summer Institute in York, Maine. Alan November had done the opening one, and I got to close, and it was an incredibly hot day. These poor people were in 90 plus degrees in this auditorium, and at the end of a very long week, and they stuck with this presentation that I had, and I thank York and all those people for that opportunity. So, sit back, we'll take you back to that day, and we plan to get another show up this weekend or possibly Monday with Seedlings at Bit by Bit.
Thank you. The food was wonderful. And now I'm going to introduce Dr. Scipione, who will introduce our keynote speaker, Bob Sprankle.
Thank you. I, too, just want to add my words of thanks to all of you for being here this weekend. Hopefully you found this to be a week of time well spent. We struggled but made sure we got the heat for you so you would appreciate it so much tomorrow when you have your first day off. You know, it's not often that we have the opportunity to have someone that is, quote, one of us that comes and presents in a keynote fashion. Bob Sprankle is one of those people. Bob is a teacher in Wells. For those of you that are not familiar with this area, Wells is the school district just to the north of us. He's a technology integrator there, and he's recognized for his work in technology, not only throughout the state, but nationally as well. And it's interesting when you look at the site, the recognition isn't about Bob, but it's about Bob's kids. And to quote here, it says his students have received worldwide recognition for their Room 208 podcast and have appeared in numerous articles, including the New York Times and the Apple's educational site. So it's noteworthy, I think, that it's not all about him, but it's about the work that he does with his own kids. But clearly, in his own right, he's recognized as a technology leader. And has received a number of awards, including Maine's Technology of the Year, a Teacher of the Year Award. So it's our privilege and our honor to have him be our closer today, following up with the work that we heard from Alan November on Monday. So we thank him very much for being here, so please join with me in welcoming him.
All right, let's figure this out. All right. Does that work? No? Too low? Higher? Okay, well, thanks. Yeah, I am a tech integrator, and my name is Bob Sprankle, or see if that's working. BobSprankle.com, that's my other moniker.
Excuse me. Yeah, mind if I interrupt you right there?
I'm sorry, did I leave my Skype on here? Alan, is that you?
No, it's not your Skype.
Who is it?
Yeah, it's me. It's your higher self. Yeah, that's right. And I just wanted to stop you right there.
If you're my higher self.
Yeah, that's right.
You're my higher self.
Yeah.
If you're my higher self, why do you have an English accent?
Because I'm your higher self. Now, the reason I'm stopping you is because you're not going to start the thing like that, are you?
Why not?
Well, bloody cricket, it's just so flat. I mean, I don't mean to offend you, but I mean, your whole talk is about engaging kids, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, part of the talk is about engaging kids. Most of it is about engaging kids in the classroom, yeah.
Right, and I mean, this isn't very engaging. No offense, but I mean, it isn't.
Well, you know, I thought it was all right. I kind of pick up steam as I get going.
You've got to come out with a big splash, you know. This is a keynote, and these poor people, look at them. They've been here for days, and on top of that, they're teachers. They're exhausted. You've got to spice this thing up.
Okay, well, what do you suggest?
I'm glad you asked. You know, studies show that people learn better when they're laughing. Are they laughing?
A little bit, yeah.
Great, well, get them laughing. The brain learns better that way. It not only works for kids, it works for old people, too.
Yeah, but what if they're laughing at...
Oh, and another thing. Studies show that physical movement works, too. Gets the brain totally engaged.
I think I heard that, actually.
Okay, I got it. Tell them to stand up. Get them up out of their seats. Get them up.
What?
Yeah, no kidding. Ask them all to stand.
That's just rude.
Do it. What do you got to lose?
They could stand up and walk right out that breezy door there.
Go ahead, ask them to stand. I'll wait.
Would y'all just stand up? I'm sorry, I know you're hot. I just don't think he's going to stop. All right, they're standing. Now what? They're all standing.
Okay, you've got to get them moving. Hold on, I've got just this thing.
Okay, now I just feel silly.
Excellent. This perfect state of mind for learning.
Okay, can I get this started now? Is that...
By all means.
Really? Nothing else you want to say?
No, I'm good.
You sure?
Yes, I'm good. Carry on, good fellow.
Okay, wow, imagine if every presentation started like that. So as I was saying, I am BobSprankle.com. Hopefully it's a little hotter in here for you now. And... I have been a teacher for 10 years at Wells, just transitioned into the technology coordinator. But before that, I was a 3-4 multi-age teacher for that time. And we'll talk about the Room 208 story and show you that site and everything. Let's try this. This is my website, bobsprankle.com. You'll see I have a bit by bit, my own blog there. And you'll also see...
do it this way.
The Wells Elementary School site and also Room 208's blog that they're no longer adding to, but this is where all the podcasts are. And then if you want anything from today, the handouts are on the workshop links. You'll see the York Institute. Click on that and it'll bring you to a portal link there with all the things that I talk about. Just a little bit more about my blog. I started this because a lot of teachers were writing and asking, well, how do you do this podcast thing? So I started a podcast to explain that. I have a Bit by Bit podcast once a week, and I do a Seedlings at Bit by Bit podcast with my colleagues Cheryl Oakes and Alice Barr that we do once a month, all about integrating technology into the classroom. So you might want to check that out. Okay, open the windows and let the breeze out of the world in. Open the windows to the classroom. Well, what does that mean? Or you're probably thinking, why in the world would I want to do that? My classroom's chaotic enough. Why do I want to bring the world in? Or why do I want to listen to this guy and maybe consider doing a podcast with that too? Well, I'm hoping that you'll see that podcasting is an excellent way to do these three things. Engage your kids, create purpose for their work, and hopefully prepare them for the future. So podcasting is one tool. That's my tool that I use. That's what I'm going to talk about. But it's not the only way, and it really doesn't have to be technological, and it's really not about the technology today. Now, speaking of engage, I need to engage you. When Marianne asked me to do this, she said, you want to go in the morning or the afternoon? And the dirty trick to do it in the afternoon, I guess. I said, oh, I'm flexible, go ahead, whatever. And then I realized, holy cow, I'm doing this right before a barbecue. And not only that, you've been conditioned for the past 4 days to eat at 12 o'clock, right? So you're supposed to be eating now, or your stomach thinks that, and now you have me. So I really need to engage you to keep you focused here. I'm going to take a page from Mark Prensky. He's a game designer, an educator, a public speaker. This is his book. I'll talk about that in a little bit. And when I saw him speak, he said, well, at least, you know, if you're totally, like, burnt out from the week, at least on the lowest level you can play a game with the slides and actually keep count of how many times you see any slide related to grilling, hamburgers, food of any sort, okay? And so then at the end I'll tell you how many slides that was. Also, to keep me engaged, keep me on my toes, I send my slides to We Take Your Slides and Randomly Mess Them Up in order to keep you on your toes.com. And they take your slide, and I ask them to put a certain slide in that every time it comes up, I'm going to break away from my conference, you know, kind of spontaneous, and tell a story about room 208. So that'll keep me on my toes and from passing out from the heat as well. Let's see if the site... you should check out that site sometime. It's pretty good. It seems to be down right now. But I gave him a slide, and every time that pops up, what I'm going to ask you to do is call out story time, and then I'm going to break away. It's going to shock me into telling a story. So here's what the slide looks like. Oh, and that grill, that counts, right? That's picture number two. Okay. So when you see this, the millisecond that you see it, you've got to shout out story time, okay? And that'll help engage you some more. So let's try that. Let's pretend I'm giving my presentation. And all of a sudden, you know, out of nowhere, here comes.
Story time!
We can do better than that. Let's go back. All right, here I am giving my presentation, and you never know when it's going to come.
Story time!
Okay, great. So you just count that slide as one for the game. So we're up to two for the game. All right, what's a podcast? We better clear that up before we start talking about podcasting. How many people have ever listened to a podcast? How many people also read blogs? Let's find out a little bit about you. How many people have their own blog? Okay, how many people blog the week, the conference? Okay, anybody have their own domain name like you saw that I have? Okay, two people, great. So a podcast is an audio file that's on the web, and you might be thinking, well, we've always had that. What makes it a podcast? In short, it's a podcast because it can be subscribed to in a feed. Okay, and that's all I'm going to say about it. Don't even worry about it. That's not what we're here about today. We're here to talk about engaging kids. If you want to find out more about it, go to Bit by Bit, and you can listen to any of those podcasts that I have about it. So instead of me tell you what a podcast is, I'm going to show you a film that my third graders made. The fourth graders were invited up to USM to do a presentation on their work. The third graders weren't able to come, and they said, we want to make a film that the fourth graders can take. So they wrote this whole film, decided what was important to report out about, and here it is.
Hi, we're Sam from 208, and this is how we make a podcast.
We do a rundown every Monday at snack. We figure out who is doing what. Like Haley and Bailey always do math corner. We have to write what the piece is, who is doing it, if it's written, mixed, and edited. The rundown is so everything is organized.
Hi, we are going to tell you the gear you use in the podcast.
All you really need is a computer,
but you might want something more portable. We first started out with the iRiver. The iRiver is really cheap and it's great to use.
But then Mr. Sprinkle won $1,000 and we got an Adderall, which is great for recording our podcast. We also bought handheld mics and mic stands. We bought a mixer and headphones too. And that's all you need to make a podcast.
Oh yeah, and don't forget the kids.
On our podcast, we have different corners.
Elizabeth's Ark is one of the many corners on our podcast. We have some new corners this year, like Writing with Emily.
Corners are on one topic. We get to make up the corners as long as it's appropriate.
Like, because we want them to be funny, but also we want them to be kind of weird. And actually, we do want them to be weird.
Hi, we're going to tell you about student news. Every podcast has a student news. We do student news so that we can tell what we're doing in school.
First, a few people pick a topic for their groups. Then each group goes off and writes about their topic.
Then we'd have to start talking about the lies. Yeah. And then we'd have to get
it. Okay, I get it.
Once each group is finished, we all come together and edit each group's work.
Well, when all the groups come together, sometimes like people argue about stuff, but then, like, at the end, it usually works out. Student news usually takes about 1 or 2 days.
And then it only takes a few minutes to record. We teach other people on our podcasts a lot. When we write, we teach Mr. S and a lot of other people in the classroom.
And started feeling the braille. We thought it was going to be really hard, but we just had to memorize it.
We're going to talk about the intro and outro.
The intro and outro are the starting and the ending of our podcast.
Mr. S picks 2 people to write the intro and the outro. The first person starts the show. This is the intro.
And the last person finishes the show. This is the outro.
After we're done recording, we edit the podcast. We first mix it, then we take out words that don't go in the podcast, like bloopers.
Now we're going to talk about how it all gets mixed down. Mr. S works late into Friday nights mixing and editing our podcast.
He stays up so late working on our podcast. And to stay up, he has to drink 2 cups of coffee.
Mr. S does the editing because it takes too much time and we need to do other work.
After we make the podcast, we put it on the site.
And people can enjoy it anywhere they want.
You're listening to Room 208 Podcast, December 16, 2005.
This week we have student news, word of the week, math. What did you think of the movie? Tell us at bobsprinkle.com. We hope you enjoyed it. Bye.
And just as a disclaimer, it doesn't have to take 2 hours to edit it. I don't want that to scare you away. It's just I'm crazy on coffee, so I'm doing that. Let me take it back to the beginning of my career when I started teaching. The first year, right away, I had a website.
And I had the website for two reasons. One, so that I could start to open up that window and let parents see into the classroom and see what we were doing. And two, to publish the kids' work to motivate them to write on and publish it in a real, on the world wide web format. You know, back in those days, and even a little bit today, to do a website is pretty laborious. It takes time. Just to get my student news up each week would take about an hour to 2 hours. So I wasn't really updating the kids' work all that often, maybe once a month, snow days, vacation. So they weren't that motivated. They saw it as my website, which it sort of was. When blogs came out, I immediately switched, and it changed everything. You see on the left side, all that text is each student's corner. They have their own web page. And it's instantaneous, right? They could give me something, I could publish it right away. So I tricked them. I rolled this out during a poetry unit when, you know, poetry's pretty quick for third and fourth graders. They would write the poem. I'd sit down with my laptop. The ink would still be wet. I'd take it. I'd type it up. 2 minutes later, it was published on the World Wide Web. They were floored. They loved this. They were writing like crazy. They would email me poems at home. They would leave poems and artwork on my desk. Please scan this. Put this on my section. So we did that, and I also thought, why am I the one writing the newsletter? This is their job. It's their learning. So I asked them to write a weekly newsletter. We started it on Thursday, and we would finish it on Friday and then get it right up on the web. Again, that open window for the parents. So when I heard about podcasts, I thought, oh, let me just show this. This is first graders. I have this article on the site, first graders blogging up in Canada. And I love how the article starts. You know, if you can't make your own blog, then go back to first grade, because these guys are doing it. There's no excuse, right? And again, it says it's motivated them to work because the whole world's seeing it, and you know they're connecting with their learning in a meaningful way. So first graders are doing it as well. Well, when I heard about podcasts, I thought, hey, we already have a script. We have our weekly news. All we have to do is record it and put it out there. And you know, actually, the recording part takes like 3 minutes. It's the writing that takes all the time. And so I asked the kids if they wanted to do that, and they said, yeah. Well, they were already motivated by the blog. Now they were incredibly motivated by the podcast. I don't see a red grill. That's all right. It's coming. and so they were incredibly motivated. And I heard, you know, kids that, you know, they couldn't wait to get to school. Their parents were saying all they talked about was the podcast. And kids that didn't know what to write about before suddenly had plenty to write about. Let's just look at what happened with our writing. You know, we had the student news, and we also had niche pieces that they decided on. And with the student news, they would decide, I'd use my fairness cards, and I'd pick a student like Ashley, what do you want to report out on this week? She would decide the next three or four people in the fairness cards would go work with her. And so in that, a lot of peer teaching was happening. If four kids showed up and only two knew what they were writing about with that science project, then a lot of reteaching would happen in peer teaching. And my role changed. I started walking around and just asking guiding questions. And the team writing benefits, you know, that's part of multi-age, as the youngers learn from the olders. This was really happening a lot more in these small groups that were happening once a week. And, you know, they were figuring, they'd do the editing in their small groups, and I'd hear them say, hey, you need an indent there, or that's spelled wrong, or read that sentence again, it doesn't make sense. And then, like you saw in the movie, they come back together and they do it all over again with the whole class. And I was, my 5-minute mini lessons were changing because now it was authentic, it was happening right there. And they wanted to fix it because they kept saying, we've got to get this right, people are going to hear this, they're going to read this. And even times they would, you know, a mistake would come up when they'd read it, and I'd think, I'll let that go. That's pretty sophisticated. We haven't done that yet. But sure enough, some student would catch it, you know, and they may not know what to call it, and I would do that. I'd say, oh, yeah, that's our subject-verb agreement thing that we were talking about. But they would catch all these mistakes. We were doing research on a daily basis. We used to do a big research project at the end. Now it's happening weekly. And because they were deciding their own pieces, you know, they were incredibly motivated. So students aren't passive. They're designing their whole learning through this. And then we know this, right? The learning pyramid. You know, people are going to retain information when they get out there and they teach it. So having the blog, having a podcast, that's what they're doing. They're teaching it, and we know it's at 80%. Practice by doing with the writing, 75%, and then those discussion groups, which are invaluable, are at 50%. Their ideas versus mine. The great thing right away was I came up with the student news, and then I had all these ideas. You'll even hear later on in one of the audio students say, "Oh yeah, I forgot about this week in history." You know, that was my idea. They got rid of it right away, right? They came up with their own ideas. And so, you know, people came up, like one student came up and said, "I want to do weird fact of the week." I said, "Great, what's that?" "Well, I love Ripley's, and I want to, you know, do all this stuff about Ripley's." And I said, "Okay, you're going to have to write Ripley's and see if you get permission. I don't know if they will." I didn't think they would. Sure enough, he writes Ripley's. Ripley says, "Yeah, just give us attribution." So they started this weird fact of the week. Word of the week. A student came up with that. What a great way to teach vocabulary. She would pick a word that people didn't really know, ask them, they'd give funny responses, what they thought it meant, and then she would teach the word. Emily's writing corner. Emily came to me one day and said, "I want to do a writing corner." I said, "Great, what's it going to be?" "I want to take all the lessons that you've taught and reteach them for the kids to listen to at home." Wow, why didn't I think of that? That's brilliant, you know? So this was great. I loved it. They just threw out everything I did and took over. The thing that was very validating, you know, when I left the classroom, right, I have a multi-age, so my third graders, I left in the middle, and that was really hard for me. But they got a great teacher, Beth Bush, and, you know, she showed up, and right away, those third, now they're fourth graders, right, they say, "We want a podcast, we want to still podcast." And this brave woman said, "Sure, what's a podcast?" You know? So it took about 2 months for them to get into it because, you know, we were rolling out a new reading program and testing at the beginning of the year and all those other things that I'm sure you deal with. So it took about two months. I knew they had started one day, and I went up the next day to her classroom. I said, "How's it going?" She said, "Oh my God, you know, I should have them podcast anything I want them to learn. They're totally motivated. I don't even need to be here. They're getting all the sources. I haven't seen them work this hard until this." Here's that book that I mentioned, Great Summer Read. It's about looking at video games. He's a game designer. And no matter what you feel about video games, this is a great read because it asks the question, why are kids motivated and engaged in these video games and we're not seeing that in our schools? How can we make school as exciting as that? Is that possible? And what I took from it was, you know, if we put that thing that is the most interesting thing to that kid at the center of their learning, they're going to be intrinsically motivated to pursue that. It's a great book.
Story time.
All right, so making deals. You know, those guys that did the Ripley's, the weird fact of the week, you know, I didn't even know this. They set up this whole deal because this is their baby. This is their project. But the kid that came up with the idea, he was a fourth grader. He wanted a partner. He made sure he didn't get another fourth grader. He made sure he got a third grader. So that when he leaves, the piece is going to continue on because, you know, he created this. This is his legacy. And then that third grader did the exact same thing. When he was a fourth grader, he made sure he had an apprentice of a third grader. And I just watched the baton get passed again at the last week of school. So they made sure that these things live on. Hey, I made some deals too. I had one student, one day I was talking to her, I'll call her B, and she was talking about how she just hates math and, you know, she has no confidence in it and she really struggles in it. Well, 2 days later, her best friend Emily says, "I want to do a math corner for the podcast." I said, "Great, what's it going to be?" "Oh, I want to teach everybody the everyday math games." I said, "Great." I turned to B, I said, "Hey, B, you want to be in this?" "Yes, of course, it's her best friend, right?" So here's this kid that 2 days ago didn't consider herself a mathematician. Now she's teaching the whole world math, right? So you can kind of manipulate it that way. Why are they engaged? Well, I believe because now they have purpose to their work. There's a great Richard Brautigan title called So the Wind Won't Blow It All Away, and I think about that title all the time when I think about this. You know, there's so much we do in school, you know, that's for that moment or maybe for that test or for who knows what purpose. Maybe the students don't know. And it's gone, you know, and this stuff is gold. You know, when you listen to some of those podcasts, keeping all that learning, you know, like they tape Don Fendler, who came and spoke at the school. You know, it's one of the most downloaded files from their site. People all over the world are listening to that. So this stuff is gold, and we don't want to lose it. You know, I know that, you know, I'll bet you had a similar experience as I did in school. This is my fourth grade report card. My dad sold the house. He packed everything up. He gave me this package my mom had saved. And in there was my fourth grade report card. And this is it. This is all the information I have, right? I don't know what we studied. I don't know what my interests were. I don't know who my friends were. And I've got a lot of questions. You know, for instance, how did I get this F in math? Right? I went from a C plus, C, F, back up to a C. My effort stayed at A minus the whole year, right? I didn't miss 8 days that semester. I don't know if that's it. But, you know, I hope my parents got that information. I don't have anything to look back on. It's gone. The wind blew it away. I imagine future archaeologists digging this up and just having, you know, a real tough time with it. So, you know, I don't know anything, except, oh, I do know one more thing. Tucked in the report card, I found out that I got best snack of the year. Yeah, I'm very proud of that. Of course, that's my mom's doing, right? But so, you know, that's it. So I know we don't report out like this anymore, you know, and this is why we've gone to portfolios. Well, a blog or a podcast is an excellent portfolio because, you know, you can archive it, burn it to disk, keep it on the web for however long, shows growth over time, and parents, family members, anybody interested can archive it 24/7. So it's a great one. And so, you know, in our day, when we wrote in class, we wrote for an audience of one, the teacher. And we'd get limited feedback from that teacher. You know, she's got 20 other students, maybe a grade. Best case scenario, it goes home and it hangs on the refrigerator. Right? Worst case scenario, it stays at the bottom of my desk to be thrown out at the end of the year. How long is that going to motivate us when we can now publish to an entire global audience and get feedback? And that was the big switch with that blog is, you know, the web page was one way, right? We put it out there. We don't know if anybody's reading it or not. With a blog, now people are communicating back with comments. And even just the other day, that blog hasn't been used in a year. People are still leaving comments for those kids that I'll track them down and get back to them about their writing. I love this quote by George Lucas, you know, and I'm sure Alan talked about this a little bit on Monday. You know, how do we get schools to mirror real life? You know, we're doing things for unknown reasons as a kid, and we have that abstraction. And then also, you know, the World Wide Web is a great way to end that isolation. I just saw an article that Alan has at Tech Learning on, and I put it in the links, where he has a statement, schools as a no reality zone, you know, just that it doesn't mirror anything. He's talking about how his kid can't use the tools that he's used to using.
Story time.
You guys are tired, huh? Okay, this first story, this was a story I told my kids. We were sitting over lunch one day, and I just started rambling. I said, hey, you know what would be cool? You know what would be great? Is if everything you did at school, all the engagement, all your effort, was translated into kilowatts that powered your house, right? So, hey, you want to watch TV or play video games when you get home? You better work hard at school, right? You can imagine going home, and there's your parent outside this blackened house. You slacked off today, didn't you? Bread and leftovers, a cold meatloaf, right? So I thought about that. They loved that. They thought that was a great idea. And I thought, hold it, it's got to be like that. That's what it's got to be. Why can't what we're doing at school really count and light up the community and go back? You know, we live in a time where we can really change the world. One of the first podcast sections that a girl came up with was Bree's Animal Corner. And she was taking animals. They would fax her 4 animals a week from the Kennebunk Animal Shelter, and she would talk about them on her podcast, and a couple animals actually got adopted. You know, without even technology, my colleague Henry Ingerson and I, another multi-age teacher, we were both teaching poetry, and the tsunami happened, and the kids wanted to do something. So together we came up with the idea of let's have a poetry night. And, you know, we had a fee of people getting in, and they sold their poems on bookmarks, and they raised over $400 for tsunami victims. And how cool is that when they're seeing that, wow, my word is translating into money to go help somebody. So I believe we can do that. And the other part, I believe that podcasting is helping to, or any of these tools, opening those windows to the world is going to help prepare our kids for the 21st century. How many people have read Tom Friedman's The World is Flat? Okay, I'll just sum it up real short for you. In short, the world's flat. Everybody can compete on a level playing field. Asia and India are going to eat your kids' lunch, and we've got to prepare our kids at a higher level so that they can compete. And so, you know, just up to, you know, in Maine, you know, how are we doing? This panel that is trying to put all these things in place, their first sentence in their report is, we're not ready. We're nowhere near ready. And, you know, major change has got to happen. So what do we do, you know? And Alan was here. I'm sure he talked a lot about 21st century skills, right? And, you know, what are these skills that we need to be teaching the kids? According to Alan, information literacy. We've got an overabundance of information. How are kids going to be able to be trained to get in there and find what they need? Global communication. We don't know what they will be for these kids when they get out, but they're going to be global and probably deal with technology. And then a self-directed learner, he says, is very important. If nothing else, bosses cost money. If I don't need a boss, I'm more marketable than somebody that does. David Warlick. Anybody know David Warlick? Another great educator, great consultant, speaker. You guys should get him next year. He also talks a lot about 21st century skills. Again, the information part, exposing that knowledge that's out there, using that knowledge to serve you, expressing ideas compellingly. You see, I have that in bold. I'm going to talk about that in a moment, about how important that is, and then the ethical uses of that information. There's a site called 21stcenturyskills.org, and it's all about, you know, all these great thinkers and policymakers and business people coming together and trying to infuse these skills into schools to have them taught. And here's just some of the highlights from what they're talking about. You know, leadership again, collaboration, critical thinking skills, and that global awareness. We've got to be doing that. And so I was lucky enough to have my colleague Cheryl Oakes go and interview my kids about 21st century skills. So she's using the language of 21st century skills and asking them how podcasting and even the blog is serving that. So here they are talking about it.
So if you have your podcast and it's on the internet like a radio and other people listen to it, how does global communication play into that, Emily?
Well, it helps because some people listen to it and learn, and we're also listening.
That's right. You have a huge audience, yep. And now you're an audience for other people.
Yeah.
Okay, we have another group, and they're going to talk about self-directed learning. What does self-directed learning look like in the classroom? And how do the podcast and blog help you become a self-directed learner? And we're going to hear from Elizabeth first, who's going to talk about how she transformed something that someone started last year in the podcast.
Well, for starters, I changed it from Animal Corner to Elizabeth's Ark, and I probably called more times.
So you've actually called an animal welfare group. You found the animals that they are trying to place in homes, and you're, like, writing up your own advertisements. Anyone else have another way that you are self-directed learners in your classroom?
Well, the way it works is when we're writing stuff for the podcast, and I think that helps us because it gets us more focused and helps us with our writing and science skills and math, all the other skills.
Who comes up with the ideas for the podcast?
All of us.
So how is that being a self-directed learner, Ty?
Well, with us coming up with the ideas for the podcast, it's not like you can do almost like anything that you're good at. You don't, like, the teacher doesn't tell you that, like, you're doing this and you're doing this. Like, Zach and me and James last year did Weird Fact of the Week, and now, since I'm in fourth grade, I chose Zach to do it with me. And then when he's in fourth grade, he's going to choose third grade. And when that third grade is in fourth grade, I'm going to keep learning from all the experience that we have from the podcast and blog.
That's great. So not only are you self-directed, finding what you need to do, you're directing other people to learn how to do this skill.
A lot of other classes have started podcasting because of us, too.
Any other examples of how you're a self-directed learner with the blog?
About Cassidy, she really does her own learning. She really gets it done with Word of the Week.
Oh, yeah.
She can learn new words and know what they mean.
And teaches everybody else.
We can put almost anything we want on the blog.
And really, we get to make up pretty much anything.
As long as Mr. S approves it.
Yeah, and we learn a lot from that. It seems like we barely learn anything, but if you think about it, we really learn a lot.
Like Mr. S is teaching us about technology with our new equipment. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it doesn't feel like learning because it's so much fun?
Yeah.
And with all the new technology, if we learn about it now, it'll really help in the future, because in the future, this whole world will pretty much be computer-based.
Mm. Also, it's kind of fun to, like, think about last year, and we only had, like, a couple sections, like, we had student news, and we had This Week in History, and, like, sometimes we would have Mail Corner. But now this year we have, this year we pretty much every week have mail, and we always have student news, or else there wouldn't be the podcast that week. And we have, like, Elizabeth's Arc and Cassie's. We have Weird Fact of the Week and
Writing Corner with Emily. Emily's Writing Corner.
Who has the math?
Haley and Bailey. Yeah. The Aileys.
And even Mary and Courtney were thinking about doing a section about science, like the tornadoes.
Uh-huh. Last year, me and Carrie did on the Mail Corner, and this year it's going to be me and Sage.
Oh, great. So you're teaching people, too.
I forgot about the This Week in History.
When we get a new corner, we learn more of that topic, which helps a lot.
Would you rather create a podcast, be a self-directed learner, or watch a TV show?
Direct the
direct.
Be the podcast.
Be the podcast.
Yes, you get to write.
So they'd rather do a podcast than watch TV. That's pretty good. So, you know, in review, I think that a podcast is a way to get them to prepare for 21st century skills with, you know, they have a job, they got to communicate to parents, they're being global citizens, reflecting with that larger community, and obviously self-directed learners. Anybody heard of this book? Did Alan talk about this on Monday, by any chance? Really? Wow. Whole New Mind by Dan Pink. Great book, great summer read, very quick. And Pink's argument is that we're moving out of this information age into the conceptual age, and that we need to be teaching these six senses to prepare kids, and that the right brain people are going to take over. And he talks a lot about design, and, you know, going back to that whole design thing that Warlick showed, you know, how am I going to get my message heard out of this whole cacophony of information that's out there that we need to prepare people to do? So, yeah, check out that book. And, you know, as we think about that, you know, we got to think about the assessments that we're doing with kids. You know, are we going to do the same old thing that we've had, or are we going to allow them to design and show their knowledge through podcasts, blogs, or something like the movie that I showed you? One more thing really quickly, you know, I mean, we're living in an interesting time. You know, there is a huge shift in the world where in a matter of minutes, people can set up a blog or a podcast and have a global voice. And we've seen, you know, how this can change things. You know, just think of Dan Rather and his job. So we've got to teach our kids, you know, how to do this. And, you know, I said it wasn't about the technology. Well, it is a little bit about the technology, because as they start creating these things, they're becoming critical thinkers and not just consuming media without thinking, because they say, wow, I've designed this. I know what goes into this. I can look at this critically. Let's see. For time, I think I'll stick with one of these stories, and this is about Warlick and Wiki. They're, you know, trying to get my kids ready for the 21st century, I bring in articles about things that are happening in the world, and I bring in a lot about Wikipedia, the pros and the cons, and talk about that. Well, I brought in this one article about the John Siegenthaler event that happened. I don't know if you remember, but somebody had gone onto John Siegenthaler's
part on Wikipedia and, you know, wrote that he was involved in the assassination of Bobby and JFK Kennedy. And, of course, he took umbrage of that because, you know, he worked for Bobby Kennedy. So I read this New York Times article, you know, at a college level to the kids that morning. And, you know, it shows how, like, some other guy figured out who did it, and they track him down like detectives, and he goes and delivers a note to John Siegenthaler and all that. Very complicated. Well, they were way into this. So at the end, I said, stand up if you want to, you know, go home tonight and tell about this story to your family. And seven kids stood up. I said, stay standing if you want to work on a podcast section on this. And they stayed standing. So I let them go off and work on that. And just naturally, they broke up into two groups. One group had the highlighter with that very difficult New York Times article, and they're highlighting the whole thing and setting together a timeline of the events. The other group takes off, and they want to write about what we learned from this. So they published this incredible article. It's all on that portal link. You can hear this whole thing play out. And they publish it on their podcast. Dave Warlick, he listens to our podcast. He listens to that. He goes to a presentation, and he plays it at the presentation. And he asks the people, he says, well, what do you think about this with self-directed learning? A couple people raise their hand, and they're giving some nice comments to room 208. And then this third gentleman raises his hand. He said, you know, I don't think these kids wrote that piece. I think Mr. Sprankle wrote that piece. This is pretty sophisticated, and, you know, these words they're using and all. Well, Dave Warlick podcasted that presentation. So I bring it back to the kids and play it for them. And, of course, they erupt, you know. And we record that. And that goes back to Dave Warlick, who writes an article about it. It just keeps going around. See, they're not in isolation anymore. They're part of this bigger conversation. Dave Warlick, I'll get to that in a second. This is another great book. Easy to read, hard to read, I think. It's one of the pivotal books that I've ever read. By Frank Smith, The Book of Learning and Forgetting, really challenges a lot of what we have been doing in education. But what he says is we learn from the company we keep. And we know this, you know, in the days of yore, you know, if you were set up in a town and as a, you know, someone who did something, people would come to you and do an apprenticeship with you, you know, much like those fourth and third graders are doing with Weird Fact of the Week, you know, or what's happening when you open the windows to the world. Dave Warlick has this great quote on one of his blog entries, you know, where he says, hey, you know, teachers and students, we're information artisans. You know, we're going out there and we're finding this information, and we as teachers have to be the learner models. And, you know, as an artisan, you're a skilled artist, you know, and in the book by Frank Smith, he talks about how teaching used to be an art. Now, you know, it's sort of considered a science, and he shows how that happened over time. So, you know, if we're going to be the learner models, well, then we have to open up our own windows, not just the windows to the classroom. And I know it's scary, but if those first graders can blog, then you can start a blog, and you can lead the way for your kids and show them, you know, this is the ethical considerations when having a blog. This is how we do this morally, all those kinds of things. So we have to do it, too. This is the easiest way. In half the time it takes to eat a hamburger, you can sign up for Podcast People and have a podcast and a blog. They have different tiers of accounts. The free one is more than enough bandwidth and space for any classroom until you become really famous. So it takes no time. I had somebody set up in 4 minutes in my lab the other day. Also, if you want more education around podcasts, what does that RSS thing mean, or Web 2.0 tools, this is a conference that was online in 2006. They're getting ready for the 2007. Completely free. Dave Warlick does the keynote. You got to download it. It's a video podcast. All the presentations are there just waiting for you to take it, your own self-directed learning. And I'll bet they do it again for the 2007, but I was actually able to get college graduate credits through Plymouth State and Shanghai University for doing this. So they probably offer that again, too. Surprise, I'll tell these really quickly. You know, if you don't believe that kids want those learner models, those artisan teachers that are going to walk them through, here's a great example. One day, Discovery Education Channel people were coming to see the kids. They're famous. They're in the New York Times. They're on TV. They're on radios. They wanted to come and hang out with them. They came. They brought them T-shirts. They bought them pizza. We had soda in the classroom. It was just crazy. The kids, you know, thought they had died and gone to heaven. That same day, this parent, because it was near vacation, this parent made us breakfast. Before they came, we had, like, all this fruit and muffins. And then somebody else had a birthday. So later on, these muffins showed up. It was unbelievable. It was like Christmas, right? At the end of the day, the kids are down in specials, and another parent stops by. She's got this Easter basket filled with Easter eggs and candy and toys in it. I'm like, she goes, is it okay if I pass these out to the kids? I'm like, oh my gosh, their heads are going to explode, right? They're just off the wall. So I go down to pick them up at specials. I want to warn them, you know, because it's going to be mayhem. I said, listen, as hard as it is to believe, there's another surprise upstairs for you. Now, out of all the things the kids could have guessed what it was, three of them scream out, is it David Warlick? I told him that story. He loves it. You know, another experience where they worked with another educator, clap your hands if you know Jim Moulton. Right? Great educator, consultant, instrumental in the MLTI project. He invited the kids to come and speak at the MLTI conference last year where they were presenting to 7th and 8th graders and adults. And we said, yeah, and I had Bailey email him back to empower her. You email him. So I love it. Jim emails back and says, hey, here's a quote that you and your colleagues might want to find out about. You know, and he gives them this Marshall McLuhan quote, you know, the one, the medium is a message. Now, I barely understand that quote, right? So three kids, they finished their work for the project. They're like, what can we do now? I said, oh, you guys want to take on this Marshall McLuhan quote? Yeah, we'll do it. So we went on Wikipedia. We had a little learning group. I told them what I knew about Marshall McLuhan and what he wrote about TV in the 70s and how that medium changed the world. And, you know, they stayed with me. And they said, all right, we're going to go off. We want to do a poster to give to Jim. So they came up with this poster idea. And they decided, you know, podcasting is really a different medium because it's so personal. So they drew this girl, and there she is. And in her head is the kid saying, you're listening to Room 208. It's very personalized. And they came back understanding that the medium changes you, and the message doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what that podcast is about. That personal experience is going to have an effect on you. They gave this man, and I'm like, thank you, I now understand the quote, you know? And so then they took it to Jim, and here they are giving it to him a bit there, and this is what he had to say.
In the digital world, there are two kinds of people. There are producers and there are consumers. The producing is the hard part. It's the writing, it's the thinking, it's the speaking in thoughtful ways. The consuming is just the listening. The work will always give the results, and the power will go to the producers, and Room 208 is full of producers. Do great things.
I get a lot of email from people, and they say, wow, this is great, podcasting. Your kids are engaged, they're motivated. Hey, do you have any data that I can share with my principal, my superintendent, so that I can do this? Well, I actually did have some data that I could put my hands on. Here's my fluency score. And you see the fall and the spring, and here's my at-risk kids, and you see that most of them made it or exceeded, you know, the expectations by the end of the year. Was this because of the podcast? I don't know. I've never seen fluency scores like this in all my 10, you know, years of teaching. But, you know, I have no idea if this is what happened, you know, right? I'm just guessing. But what I do know is, you know, my assessment is those students became teachers. And if we look at this again, that means they're retaining the knowledge, right? 80% of that knowledge is retained because they went out and taught each other. And, well, okay, I guess it's time. You know, the story that I'll always hang on to is watching them three times give presentations to an audience like this, adults, kids older than them. They wrote the entire thing. They did this public speaking, and they showed everybody their work. And you can listen to these. You go to the Room 208 website, and you'll see those audio files. So I encourage you to listen to them. And that's what I'll always remember. Okay, who is playing the game? All right, here it goes. Survey says?
17.
Ooh, close.
13.
Close.
There was a hamburger drawn in the background.
Yeah, I'm sneaky. Okay, so anyway.
Yeah, you're wrapping up, I see.
Oh, you again. Yeah, I'm wrapping up.
How did your first keynote go?
Pretty good. I'm still standing. I'm a little sweaty. Like to lose the tie, but not bad.
Bravo. Jolly good. Now let's get something to eat, shall we? I'm famished.
Hey, wait a minute. You're my higher self. I thought it was just my lower self that thought about eating all the time.
Well, I can't can't help it. You kept showing all that food. It drove me near about bonkers. And I'm sure it did to these poor people, too. They must be starving. And you kept teasing them with all those pictures. Bloody cricket, they're probably ready to have you hogtied and burn you at the grill.
No, you see, I was trying to do the opposite. I knew they'd be focused on the food, so I was trying to engage them in the talk with the pictures and thought that would help.
Yeah, wish you ran that idea by me, mate. You know, every time you change a slide, I heard a stomach growl.
Okay, should we just wrap this up then? And let these people go get some food?
Sounds like a good idea.
Great. All right, let's review. Number one, you're not going to remember that data I just showed you as any more than I remember my fourth grade year, because numbers can only take us so far. If you don't believe me, read that Frank Smith book. Number two, you are going to hopefully remember the stories. That's what I hope. Those are the parts that are going to keep, and we can archive those things on the web. And number three, whenever you have a cookout, you start to grill, even toast a marshmallow. Because you've seen this, I've now conditioned you to have three words pop into your head: engage, purpose, and prepare. And you're going to get this overwhelming urge to integrate technology into your classroom and open up the windows wide. Thank you. Have a great grill.